Like Mr. Jackson's sermonette, my message also revolves around mothers, a particular mother. In fact, he mentioned that it would be good perhaps to study some of the mothers of the Bible. And so I'd like to call attention to a particular mother and a particular action that she's done and examine that today, because there is a story in Genesis that has intrigued me for years, and perhaps you've wondered about it as well. And it's the story of Jacob and Rachel, a story that's often told, but the part of the story that I'm going to focus on today is the time when Rachel is mentioned as having stolen images or gods or statues from her father. To do that, let's take a look at Genesis 31 and verse 19. In Genesis 31 and verse 19, what we find in Genesis, the message will revolve around this, and we'll give some background to it, and then follow up on it. But in Genesis 31, verse 19, and Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. Now, Laban was the father of Rachel. And in Genesis 31, skipping down to verse 30, and now, though you would needs to be gone, because you are after your father's house, yet wherefore have you stolen my gods? In other words, Laban is talking to his daughter later and says, hey, you've stolen these statues or these gods. Well, this brings up the question here in a father-daughter situation. Was Rachel a thief? Did she violate the commandments against stealing when she removed these images from her father? Was Rachel hanging on to pagan practices of worshiping statues as gods? Or why was Laban so upset at these missing images or gods? And on the surface, it seems that the obvious answer is to these questions that, yes, Rachel did steal Laban's images or gods, and Laban felt violated when the gods he worshiped were removed. Well, today I want to dig a little deeper into the words that were used and the context to get a better understanding of what actually happened. I'm sure that some of us are familiar with the story of how Jacob came to be in Syria living with his uncle Laban. Now, I'll just verbalize a little background. Of course, with the patriarchs was Abraham, and then his son Isaac was born later, who married Rebecca, mentioned in our sermonette. And they had twins, Esau and Jacob. And so you have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who become known in the Bible as the patriarchs. And so this is Abraham's grandson. Abraham's son is Isaac, and the grandson is Jacob. So let's look in Genesis chapter 28. We're going to start in verse 1. And we're going to look through this story to see if we can find a better explanation than just the surface explanation that we would otherwise read. So in Genesis 28 and verse 1, and Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, you shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. In other words, don't do like your brother has done. Verse 2, his brother Esau went and took was interested in the local women instead of. And verse 2, Genesis 28:2, and arise, go to Padan-Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take you a wife from thence from the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. In other words, your relatives on your mother's side, go to that family. And verse 3, and God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may always be a multitude of people. Verse 4, and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and to your seed with you, that you may be inherit the land wherein which you were a stranger, which God gave to Abraham. And Isaac then sent away Jacob, and Jacob went to Padan-Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob and Esau's mother. So this was the direction that was expressed. Isaac said to his son, you're going to have to go away and marry somebody with our own thinking. And at that time, I might mention, it's thousands of years ago, it was closer to creation. And the explanation for not marrying cousins or the reasons for it only came after that because of the gene pool distribution. Well, on Jacob's way then to go to his uncle Laban's home in Syria, God revealed his promise of continuing the Abrahamic blessing through Jacob. We learn that continuing on in Genesis 28. We're already there in verse 12. That's talking about Jacob here, and it says, "And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and on top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it." Verse 13, "And behold, the Eternal stood above it and said, I am the Eternal God of Abraham, your father, the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, to you I will give it, and to your seed," meaning your offspring. And verse 14, "And your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and the south. And in you and in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I'm with you, and I will keep you in all places where you go, and will bring you again to this land. For I will not leave you until you have done that which I have spoken of to you." So Jacob received an understanding of the promise that God gave to Abraham. This had a profound, and it was a profound effect upon Jacob. And he commemorated the event then by setting up a stone pillar, a marker, for as a reminder of what had occurred. Now, if those of you that have traveled in out west and the ground is too rocky to put in a post, you may notice that they will make corner posts. They will put some woven wire around and pile a, and make up a column where they will put posts or stones in it as a secure place, as an anchor post, as a corner post for a fence. And in that way, a stone marker. And in fact, some places you even have stone fences. In the Boy Scouts manual, I remember as a kid, I wasn't in Boy Scouts, but I sure loved that manual. And I remember in the manual it was saying how to indicate where you were going, to leave a marker for someone else. And what you would do is you'd place a stone, and then depending on how far it was, one or more stones on top of it, and then a stone next to it indicating what direction they were to go. So you would know by the stones how high the stone was piled, how many layers would be how far, and what stone would be in what direction. So I was always intrigued by that. So here, and we'll read on in Genesis 28 in verse 20. And Jacob vowed, saying, "If God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and food or raiment to put on," verse 21, "so that I come again to my father's house in peace," meaning coming back home from Syria, back to his father's house, his father is Isaac, "then shall the Eternal be my God," verse 22, "and this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house, and all that you shall give me, I will surely give a tenth to you." So Jacob there actually put a pile, put a stone, a marking place. And so that stone, just as a pile of stones, was evidence of an understanding and agreement. Because if you put up a pile of stones, they don't easily go away. That's an understanding. I know that on the farm where I was raised, there were rocks. And my great-grandfather had big rocks to haul off of the field. And my grandfather had smaller rocks to haul off of the field. But as long as a horse-drawn machinery could get over it, it was okay. But my great-grandfather used dynamite from time to time. If the rock was too big, he would blow it up into smaller pieces, and then the horse and the sled, or the stone boat, as they call it, would drag it off. And my father, who was also born on the farm, he would be hauling smaller rocks. Every once in a while, there would be a bigger one. So by the time it was my generation, most of them were basketball size or smaller. And by the time my children came along, we were looking at things that were like the size of a softball and smaller that we were picking up. And what do you do with those rocks? Well, you don't leave them in the middle of the field. You haul them off and you put them in the corners of the field. And each of the farmers did that so that you would have, on a corner where four farms may come together and share a corner, everybody's throwing their rock pile, a rock in the corner. So you'd have, this would basically mark where that property lines were. So commonly you would see them along a fence line or a joint property or a corner somewhere. It was evidence of an understanding or an agreement. This is where the property ends. This is where my property ends and yours begins. Now comes the story about how Jacob met and married his wife Rachel after 7 years of labor for her father Laban, and then how those 7 years turned into 14 because of the trickery of Laban. We pick that story up as we read on in Genesis 29 in verse 1, and we follow along in the story in Genesis 29. Then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east, meaning in Syria. And he looked, and behold, a well in the field. Lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth. At that time, if you didn't cover a well, and perhaps even today, windstorms and sandstorms can pollute or fill in a well. So they would cover it, put a stone over it. You don't uncover it until the livestock are ready, until you're ready to draw water for it. So that was commonly done. You didn't want a sheep or a camel or a goat or a cow to fall in the well. That would be very discouraging for all of the very difficult to get out. And verse 3, and thither were all the flocks gathered, and they rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the sheep and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in his place. And Jacob said to him, my brothers, where are you from? Whence you be, or where are you from? And they said, of Haran we are. Verse 5, and he, meaning Jacob, said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, yes, we know him. Verse 6, and he said, is he well? And they said, he is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, comes with the sheep. Verse 7, and Jacob said, lo, it's yet high day, neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water your sheep and go feed them. And they said, no, we can't until all the flocks are gathered together, till they roll the stone from the well's mouth that we water the sheep. In other words, to do it at one time. They didn't want to do it repeatedly, to roll the rock away. So they're waiting for everybody to bring their flocks. In verse 9, while he spoke to them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. She was a shepherd for her father. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Verse 11, and Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted his voice and wept. Now, if we're talking to girls that are in junior high school, they will all giggle at this point, and the guys will roll their eyes and turn red. The kissed part is actually the same word as used for greeting, so that when Jacob kissed Rachel, whether it was an actual kiss or the expression for a greeting, Jacob greeted Rachel. Obviously, I think you could say that there were sparks flying at that first meeting. And verse 12, and Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother. In other words, he was a man related on her father's side. So when you hear the term in the Bible, when it says brother, it means related, a man related on that particular side of the family. So he wasn't literally the father's brother. And it goes on to explain that in the last half of verse 12, that he was Rebekah's son. And she, meaning Rachel, ran and told her father. She didn't walk. She didn't lollygag. She didn't say, I'll take my time about this. She was apparently excited as well. Verse 13, it came to pass when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him. Well, this is a very unusual experience. When it says it came to pass, it couldn't have been very long because we know that Rachel was running. And what did Laban respond by? He also ran to meet Jacob and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house and told Laban all of these, and Jacob told Laban all of these things. What all of what things? All the things that had happened to Jacob and why he was coming there. That's all the things that we read about in chapter 28 and so far up into chapter 29. In other words, he was bringing him up to date on the family news. What had happened to Laban's sister and the news from Canaan. Verse 14, and Laban said, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him for the space of a month. In other words, you're my relative, surely, because you know all of these things. You know, Verse 15, and Laban said, Jacob, because you are my brother, should you Therefore, serve me for nothing. Tell me, what shall your wages be? Now, this tells me right here that Jacob was working for his keep, for a month. You know, just for the privilege of having a food to eat and a place to lay his head. And after a month, that's when Laban says, well, you don't have to do nothing. What do you want for wages? And verse 16, and Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. And verse 18, and Jacob loved Rachel. Well, that was the first girl that he met at the well with the flock. And he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. So now he's bargaining for an engagement. And verse 19, and Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. In other words, you'll do. Okay, I guess so. You'll be all right. And verse 20, and then he said, abide with me. In other words, you know, sure, that'll work. That'll work. We can, we've got a deal here. This daughter for 7 years. And in verse 20, and Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed unto him but a few days for the love that he had to her. Now, I find the 7 years to be quite interesting because you have historically the period of indentured servitude is 7 years. So if you look at through history and through Hebrew history and as it flows all the way up even into modern history and in modern law, there are other applications of 7 years. That after 7 years, an indentured servant who had said, I will work for you, I will contract with you, an employer, I will do this for you, and after 7 years, our contract is up, but the employer, the master in an indentured servitude situation, must provide the indentured servant after 7 years with the tools of the trade. He must have taught him something after 7 years and then provide him, if he was a carpenter, it would be a carpenter's chest of tools. If it was a printer, he would give him his printer's equipment and so forth. And that was the wages. But all during the 7 years, all the master needed to provide the indentured servant was food and shelter and training, sustenance, in order to be able to survive the 7 years. And that indentured servitude has worked for thousands of years. It was what helped build early America, was people paid for their passage to come to an America on a ship by promising 7 years, I will pay for the ticket by working for you for 7 years if you pay my ticket. And then I will be in the new colony in America, and after 7 years I can go out. So this was not an uncommon circumstance throughout history, is this concept of 7 years for similar to an indentured servitude. So when we read verse 20, that Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, they seemed to him but a few days for the love he had to her. In other words, it was great anticipation. And in verse 21, and Jacob said to Laban, now this is after 7 years, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her. In other words, they've been betrothed, now let's get married. And what happens? Verse 22, Laban gathered together all of the men of the place and made a feast. Now, this is not a small matter. If you're going to invite everybody around, the reason all the men were there is to do what? There was a lot. There were sheep and goats to be slaughtered. There was a lot of roasting to be done. A lot of whatever vegetables they had to be prepared. It was a feast, supper. It was a marriage supper. It was a big meal. Everybody was coming to this meal as a witness, to witness this particular marriage. It's not like they ran down to the courthouse, filled out some papers, got the official seal, the embossed seal on it. No, this was how it was done. To make it an official wedding. And so we read on in verse 23, and it came to pass in the evening, he took Leah, his daughter, meaning Laban did, and of course in that day they were veiled, and Jacob got the surprise of his life when he found out, as we read on in several verses, verse 25, that it wasn't Rachel, it was Leah. In verse 25, what is this you've done to me? Did I not serve you for Rachel? Why have you therefore beguiled me? In other words, tricked me. And in verse 26, Laban says, well, it must not be done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. So naturally, the firstborn would have to be married first. So Laban didn't quite put everything on the table. He wasn't fully truthful with Jacob. And, of course, after the big wedding feast, everything has been, and all the witnesses were there, and it was something that was one could not back out the next day. And Laban said, continued in verse 27, fulfill her week, basically meaning the honeymoon week, and we will give her this also for the service which you have served for serve me for yet 7 other years. In other words, the first week is Leah's, and then after that, then you can take Rachel to wife, but you got to serve me 7 more years. It was kind of a leverage, a kind of a bargaining thing that says, well, this is the way it is now. If you want Rachel, you'll have to serve another 7 years because, after all, we just don't give the younger one away before the older one. And so, as life goes on and the verses will go on and we talk about the children that were born to Leah and born to Rachel, in the other verses. And during this time, this was a very awkward time for Jacob because he's now working for his uncle for 14 years. His uncle has already tricked him after 7 years, the trick, and I don't think that they were too pleased about that. The uncle thought he had struck a good bargain, found a good hard worker. But notice what Laban says. First of all, that after Rachel had a child, Joseph, let's go to verse 24, in Genesis 30 in verse 24. Well, back up a couple of verses, verse 22. And God remembered Rachel and hearkened to her and opened her womb. For all these years, there may have been 20 years, we don't know exactly how many years. We know it was at least 14 or thereabouts. That God remembered Rachel and hearkened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bare a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. Because a childless woman was in a bad way. She didn't have the equivalent of a Social Security pension coming. Her children were her potential for support in her old age. In verse 24, she called his name Joseph, and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. In other words, now that this has occurred, she's saying, I'm going to have yet even another one. And verse 25, and it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away, that I may go to my own place, my own country. Verse 26, give me my wives and children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you. Verse 27. Very interesting to see what Laban says here. And Laban says to him, meaning says to Jacob, I pray you, if I have found favor in your eyes, stay. For I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. Ooh, even Laban, tricky Laban, would recognize that he has done well over the years, because Jacob, his son-in-law, was there. He recognized where the blessing came from, that Laban was doing well. Verse 28, Laban says, appoint me your wages, and I will give it. And verse 29, and he said to him, Jacob said to Laban, you know how I've served you and how your cattle was with me. For it was little which you had before I came. In other words, Laban was not as particularly prosperous. It was little which you had before I came, and now it's increased a multitude. How much is a multitude? It doesn't say, but I bet it's a lot. A multitude. If I had a dollar in my pocket, I would say I had very little. If I had lots of dollars in my pocket, I would say we are a multitude of dollars. I would say I had it would be many times over. So Jacob was pointing out that it was that Laban's wealth increased a multitude, and the Eternal has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I provide for my own house also? And verse 31, and Laban said, "What shall I give you?" And Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything, for if you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flock. I will pass through all of your flock today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle, and all the brown cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such will be my hire." In other words, we'll just make it easy. It'll be easy. We'll just go out and pick out certain ones that are easy to spot, and that'll be my wages, and I'll just keep working. It'll be fine. And we'll know which cattle are yours and which are mine, and we can keep working together. And verse 33, "So shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come, when it shall come for my hire before your face. Every one," meaning every one of the livestock, "that's not speckled or spotted among the goats and brown among the sheep shall be counted as stolen with me." In other words, it'll be easy to tell. These are mine and those are yours. So let's keep reading. "And Laban said, Behold, I would that it might be according to your word." In other words, let's make this deal. Okay, sounds good to me. Verse 35, "And he removed that day," meaning Jacob removed that day, "the goats that were ring-straked and spotted, and all the goats that were speckled and spotted, and every one that had some white in it, and all the brown among the sheep, and he gave them to the hand of his sons." In other words, he had children who were now learning to be shepherds. Notice verse 36. Kind of a key verse here. "And he," meaning Laban, "set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flock." So in other words, Jacob was willing to do the work, but only get part of the livestock for his wages. So, and that was the deal. And it goes on and it explains then in verses 37 through 43, the process by which Jacob was rather clever in how he made sure that his flocks or herds increased by putting the rams or the billies close to the water hole, basically. And so they increased more rapidly. And it came to pass, and it talked about the stronger cattle. So when we come down here to verse 43, And the man increased exceedingly, meaning Jacob, and had much cattle and maidservants and camels and asses. So whatever conditions, whenever Laban, who was trying to limit Jacob's wages, God was with Jacob and he blessed Jacob. And time after time, Jacob then changed the terms of Jacob's employment in chapter 31 and verse 1. Genesis 31 and verse 1. "And he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's and all that was our father's." That's how he's gotten all this glory. In other words, Jacob is getting rich, and that should be our inheritance. And Jacob is getting all of these blessings, and his livestock are increasing so much. And that really ought to be ours. Now, I suspect, and it's just my theory, that these were younger brothers of Leah and Rachel, because if we recall in the beginning that Rachel was tending her father's flocks, and that had there been older brothers, I suspect they would be tending the flocks. So it's my own little speculation that these were younger brothers and that Jacob was the older brother-in-law. And after this, when Jacob, had heard these words of his brothers-in-law, verse 2, "Then Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not as toward him as before." Well, Jacob had overheard his brothers-in-law talking about how Jacob had somehow gotten the inheritance away from their father, because his herds were growing more, were growing faster. And the brothers-in-law were jealous. There's no previous mention of Laban's sons that I could find to this point in the scripture. So at this point, we have about 20 years of serving Laban. And Jacob asked his father-in-law, Laban, that he again be allowed to return back to his father Isaac along with his wives and children. Genesis 30 and verse, actually it mentions the 20 years in Genesis 30 and verse 41. But let's go to Genesis 30 and verse 25. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you." We opened with this, was one of the verses. And verse 27, and Laban said to him, "I pray, if I found favor in your eyes, stay, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake." And this is a recounting of the deal. "Appoint me my wages and I will give it. You know how I've served you," and so forth. Laban had the deal with Jacob, that Jacob would remain and that Jacob would get a share of the increase. And Jacob and Laban did acknowledge that he was blessed. In Genesis 31 and verse 3, "And the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock." In other words, he didn't do it around the house. He said, "Let's go out here to a little more privacy. We need to have a serious talk." And so Jacob called Rachel and Leah, his wives, out into the field by the livestock. And verse 5, "And he said to him, I see your father's countenance," meaning his behavior, the way he looks at me. "It's not towards me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my power I've served your father. And your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. If he says thus, the speckled shall be my wages, then all the cattle were speckled. And if he said thus and such, the ringstrake shall be your hire, then all the cattle bear ringstrake. Thus God has taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me." I mean, all is a general term. It means the dominant portion of it. "And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said," meaning the angel, "said, lift up your eyes and see. All the rams which leap upon the cattle are ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled. For I have seen all that Laban has done to you." In other words, God had a hand in making sure that all of the livestock, or much of the livestock, was being reproduced in Jacob's favor, because Laban kept changing the deal. As Jacob said, 10 times you've changed my wages. In verse 13, "I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar." Remember when we first read that, where Jacob slept, had the dream, and he put the rock there? And says, "And where you vowed a vow to me, now arise and go out from this land and return to the land of your kindred," meaning of your father and your grandfather. Notice now a key verse in verse 14. And this comes to the essence today of the message. It has much to do with it in verse 14. Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, meaning Jacob, "Is there any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house?" In other words, are we going to inherit anything? If we leave, you know, we're leaving whatever's there, we're going to leave it behind. Verse 15, "Are we not counted of him as strangers? For he has sold us and devoured also our money." In other words, they were saying that their father had diminished any inheritance for them, because he diminished their father's their husband's wages. Because the girls, as we've covered, they didn't inherit. The boys inherited, and the women inherited through their husband. So by Laban diminishing Jacob's wages, therefore Leah and Rachel were having their livelihood, their future diminished as well. So that's why in verse 15 it says, are we not counted of him as strangers? In other words, there's no inheritance coming to us, for he has sold us, meaning he traded his daughters for 14 years of labor. Verse 16, for all the riches which God has taken from our father, or produced through our father, should be the best way to say that, and that is ours and our children's, and then whatever God has said to do, do. And in other words, you've done everything that God wanted you to do. Verse 17, and Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives on camels. In other words, it was a family understanding. It's time to leave and go back to Canaan, or go to Canaan with all of the family. And this is a big decision, but it was a family council that was held with Jacob and Leah and Rachel. And verse 18, and he, meaning Jacob, carried away all of his cattle and all of his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting, what he had gotten in Paddan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. So we know this is 20 years later. And verse 19, and Laban went to shear his sheep. And now notice the last half. And Rachel, and in the King James Version it says, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. Now, this brings us to the crux today, was, of course, those basic questions that we started. Was Rachel a thief? Was she hanging on to pagan practices of worshiping statues as gods? Why was Laban then so upset? Well, first of all, he discovered that when Laban was gone, when he left his house, that Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. Matthew Henry's commentary in one volume states three reasons why Rachel might have taken the images from her father Laban. According to Henry's commentary, number one, the word images, which is also interpreted as teraphim, or the word teraphim is interpreted as images or gods, were merely the images of family ancestors for which Rachel had a fondness, like family heirlooms, which were important remembrances for her as she left her only home to travel to another country, to her husband's home, a place where she had never been. That's one possible definition, but there are others. Number two, Matthew Henry suggests, or they were images for a religious use, to be worshipped or consulted as oracles, these little statues. Well, that's one possibility, Matthew Henry suggests. Or number three, or she designed to deprive Laban, her father, the use of such things, either to demonstrate the folly of idol worship, because the idols couldn't even prevent their own removal, or to prevent Laban from consulting the oracles, perhaps for the purpose of chasing them. That was Matthew Henry's commentary. However, there's a better explanation. If we are a multiple choice test, let's pick the one that says none of the above. Let's go to Pascal and Hobbes' Bible commentary that has a much better explanation. Because the word that's used here, teraphim, instead of images, can be translated household gods, were regarded in the Near Eastern cultures as a token of family property rights. In Schultz's textbook and commentary called The Old Testament Speaks, printed in both 1960 and 1970, I'm familiar with that book because it was a textbook of mine in college many years ago, and I refer to it often. It's also quite interesting that he backs up Pascal and Hobbes with his analysis that the images were an evidence of a family property right, and that is the more correct understanding when we look at the context. You see, in these days, we have wills, and we have testaments. Many years ago, I had a grandmother-in-law that died, and she had seven children, and she had much property. It was close to 1,500 acres, and I was at the funeral, and for the first time, I had met, this flock. This was over 30 years ago. And everybody got along, it seemed, that day, and they took pictures at the funeral. The next day, all seven of the children went out and hired a lawyer. each hired their own lawyer. In other words, there was a dispute regarding the family property rights. Who was entitled to what? Because they wanted to challenge the will. Grandma couldn't possibly have intended what she did, so therefore there must be some other explanation. And it happens in many families. If you talk to lawyers, they say the character really comes out on the day of the funeral or the day after the funeral or the arrangements, therefore. And so today we have wills and testaments. In that era, according to Pascal and Hobbes and according to Schultz, that these were tokens. These, what they call teraphim, were tokens, which this word also can be interpreted as images or in some cultures gods, were tokens of family property rights. And what did Rachel and Leah say back there just a few verses ago in in chapter 30, and we were reading in verse, 14 and 15, that are we not counted of him as strangers? We don't have an inheritance. Our father has stolen our inheritance, and we don't have one. But those teraphim were evidence of the rights to an inheritance. Now, at this point, we know that Laban respected Jacob's God. And Laban realized that he was blessed. We read those verses, that Laban was blessed because of Jacob's God. And so Laban knew where these blessings were coming from. So we're going to hear how Laban was willing to listen to God when God spoke to him. You see, the property rights or the inheritance issue here is important consideration because there was no mention of Laban having any sons at the time that he contracted with Jacob to marry Leah and Rachel. So we don't know of any sons that were born, and it could very well have been that Laban was concerned this was his heritage, and so therefore this was the man that was going to carry on Laban's estate because he had no sons from all appearances at that time. And once that's a possibility, we don't know that, but that certainly looks by it by the context, that he would expect then Jacob and his daughters to be well provided through his estate. But when the sons are coming along and then they're complaining, hey, you know, this is our inheritance, it's being diminished. Then all of a sudden, Laban, who's been noted to change the wages, appears to change the tune with regard to inheritance. We've mentioned that Rachel was tending Laban's flock of sheep, which would have normally been done by the sons, if he had sons at that time. So now, let's ask that question, did Rachel steal the images? Let's take a look at that word stole, as presented in Genesis 30. In verse 19, we read, Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel stole the images that were her father's. I mean, it sounds pretty blatant, doesn't it? I mean, the jury would convict on that. But let's read a little more. And the next verse, what does it say? And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban, the Syrian, for he told him not that he fled. In other words, the word steal actually didn't mean taking something. It meant something a little different. Let's take a look at Strong's Concordance. The Hebrew word 1589. To look up the word 1589 in Strong's Concordance, the word stole, it means to thieve. It could be literal or figurative. And by implication, it could mean deceive. It could also mean to carry away or secretly bring or to steal away, meaning to go someplace by stealth, to do it quietly. And in the Bible, there are many references to it. It's often used figuratively. Let's turn to 2 Samuel in chapter 15. In 2 Samuel in verse 15. And this was a time where this word was used. In 2 Samuel 15, starting in verse 1, and this was a time when King David's son Absalom was attempting to usurp the kingdom from his father. And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. He wanted to look like a king. And Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man had a controversy, came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, "Of what city are you?" And he said, "Your servant is of one of the tribes of Israel." And Absalom, verse 3, and Absalom said to him, "See, the matters are good and right, but there's no man deputized by the king to hear your cause." Verse 4, and Absalom said, "Moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which had any suit or cause might come to me, and I would do him justice." And it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And verse 6, and on this manner did Absalom to all the Israel that came to the king for judgment. And this manner did Absalom do to all the Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Now, did Absalom actually literally steal them? Well, no, that's not the context. That's not the use of the word here. It's used in a figurative sense. In other words, he carried away their emotions or their loyalties and changed their loyalties. So there can be several meanings for this word, stole. And included in that meaning is to carry away or to secretly bring something, to do it quietly. So then let's read what happened immediately thereafter. So in verse 21, so he fled with all he had, meaning Jacob, and rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward Mount Gilead. I think we're back in Genesis 30. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled. So it took a little time for Laban to realize that Jacob was gone with the family. But remember, he had separated himself between the two families for how many days apart? It was 3 days apart. So it took 3 days for Laban to find out when somebody went running back and told him. And verse 23, and he took his brethren, meaning Laban, meaning all the men he had with him, and pursued him after 7 days' journey and overtook him in Mount Gilead. And verse 24, and God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Take heed that you speak not to Jacob either good or bad." Verse 25, and Laban overtook Jacob. Now, you can imagine that Laban is riding hot with his horses and his men, and Jacob had reason to be worried, because that's why he went away quietly. Now, Laban overtook Jacob, and Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountain. They were at Mount Gilead. And Laban was with his brethren pitched in the Mount of Gilead. In other words, in verse 26, they had a meeting. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have stolen away unawares to me?" In other words, crept away quietly. "And carried away my daughters as captives, taken with the sword." In other words, just boom, they were gone. Verse 27, "Wherefore did you flee away secretly?" Same reference as to stealing away. "And steal away from me, and did not tell me that I might have sent you away with mirth and with songs and with tabret and with harp." In other words, have a party, have a big going away party. But has that happened so well before? Each time that Jacob tried to do something, Laban would change the wages, make the deal, sweeten the pot, and something. Verse 28, Laban says, "And you did not suffer me to kiss my sons and daughters. You've done foolishly in so doing." In other words, I couldn't even say goodbye to my children and my daughters and my grandchildren. Verse 29. And of course, this was a sudden case for Laban when he says, "My daughters are also gone." Now, this wasn't a gradual thing, because it happened very quickly. We hear of empty nest syndrome, where the children are, one day they're just gone. They're grown up and they're gone. And we've got kids all over the world. They're gone. They're continents, you know, away. And so we can understand that as human parents, you know, that being gone, that feeling and the frustration right at that time. Verse 29, Laban says, "It's in the power of my hand to do you hurt. But the God of your father spoke to me yesternight, saying," in other words, last night, "take heed that you speak not to Jacob either good or bad." So Laban is acknowledging that he had a dream that God talked to him. Verse 30, "And now, though you would be gone, because you sore longs after your father's house," you miss going home, in other words, you're homesick, "yet wherefore have you stolen my gods?" Ooh, does this sound familiar to what we started? In other words, he's saying, why have you taken these images, or these gods, these little statues? And verse 31, "And Jacob answered and said to Laban," meaning answering the question, "why have you gone away? Because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure you would take by force your daughters from me," which would also be the children. In other words, Jacob did not want to do without his family. That's what he had worked for all those years. And verse 31, "And Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid," okay, verse 32, "with whomsoever you find the gods, let him not live before our brethren discern what is yours with me and take it to you. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them," meaning stolen the gods or the statues, the teraphim, the little, or what they called the little idols. And obviously, if Jacob had thought that there was any removal of those little images, he would not have said, you know, "that person's life is forfeit. You may kill that person because I'm not stealing anything from you." And yet he did so. It probably wasn't even in his imagination that it could be that one of the daughters of Laban would have taken such things. And verse 33, "And Laban went into Jacob's tent and into Leah's tent and the maidservant's tent, and he found them not. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered to Rachel's tent." Verse 34, "Now Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture and sat upon them. And Laban searched all the tent, but found them not." In other words, he looked everywhere. And verse 35, "When Rachel said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before you, for it's the custom of women is upon me." In other words, her monthly cycle was there, and therefore it would have been inappropriate for him to ask her to move. And the last of the verse, "he searched but found not the images." He looked everywhere except that where Rachel was sitting. And verse 36, "And Jacob was angry." Now, before, Jacob was fine. He said, look anywhere you want. Now, why do you think Jacob was fine? Because Jacob knew his own inheritance was secure. He didn't need the inheritance of Laban. He had already gotten what he expected, and he didn't need Laban's estate. So he didn't have a reason to. So he wasn't, and there wasn't any reason for him to be upset earlier. Well, I didn't take him here. Prove it. But what does it say here in verse 36? "And Jacob was wroth." He was angry and chode with Laban. "And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued after me? Whereas you have searched all of my stuff, what have you found of all of your household stuff?" Notice it doesn't say here, pagan gods, little statues you worship, things like that. It says, have you found any of your household stuff? If you have here, set it before my brethren and your brethren that they may judge between us. Verse 38, "In these 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your she-goats have not cast their young." They didn't miscarry. "And the rams of your flock have I not eaten." In other words, he didn't save his own sheep and eat Laban's. He left Laban to have Laban's sheep and ate his own. So he wasn't taking something that wasn't his. Verse 39, "That which was torn of beasts I brought not to you. I bear the loss of it. of my hand did you require, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Now, in this case, Jacob was the shepherd, and all of his children were the shepherds, and they were taking care of it, and Laban did the count. And if something came up missing, it didn't matter if a lion or a bear or a wolf got the sheep. Laban demanded that Jacob still pay up. He still had to provide. If you had 1,000 sheep, and you were supposed to provide, you know, the offspring from those and those, it didn't matter whether they were stolen, whether it was by reason of some predator or why somebody else took them. It didn't matter. Jacob had to come up with the numbers, even out of his own portion. Verse 40, thus I was in the day that drought consumed me and frost by night and sleep departed from my eyes. This sounds like being a farmer or a rancher or a shepherd. In other words, I worked hard for you. It didn't matter if it was hot, if it was cold, what the weather was like, all of these circumstances that, I was tired, all of these things, that he did to work for what he had gained. Verse 41, thus I have been 20 years in your house. I have served you 14 years for your two daughters, 6 years for your cattle, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, had been with me, surely you would have sent me away now empty. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you yesternight. Verse 43, and Laban answered and said to Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, these cattle are my cattle, and all that you see is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters or their children which they've borne? In other words, he was still hanging on to it. It was all his. He couldn't let go. And verse 44, now therefore come, let's make a deal. Let's make a covenant. I and you, and let it be for a witness between me and you. Verse 45, and Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. This is just like Jacob set up a pillar of stones at Bethel regarding his inheritance of Abraham's blessings. We read that in Genesis 28, verse 22. So Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And verse 46, and Jacob said to his brethren, meaning all the men present, gather stones. And they took stones and they made a heap, and they did eat there upon the heap. In other words, it was a special place. And Laban called it, and it's a long Hebrew word, but Jacob called it Galeed. And verse 48, and Laban said, this heap, meaning heap of stones, is a witness between me and you this day. Therefore, the name of it was called Galeed. And verse 49, and Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between me and you when we are absent one from another. If you shall, this is the covenant now between Jacob and Laban. If you shall afflict my daughters, or if you shall take other wives besides my daughters, no man is with us. God is witness between me and you. In other words, if you diminish the position of my daughters, God's going to know about it because I won't. And verse 51, and Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I have cast between me and you. This heap be a witness, and this pillar be a witness, that I will not pass over this heap to you, and that you shall not pass over this heap and this pillar to me for harm. Didn't say they couldn't pass over it for good, but for harm. Verse 53, and the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered sacrifice upon that mount and called his brethren to eat bread. And they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning, Laban rose, kissed his sons and his daughters, and he blessed them. And Laban departed and returned to his place. Jacob and Laban had just agreed not to cross the line marked by the pillar, the perpetual witness between the two of them. By doing this, Jacob relinquished any claim to an inheritance of Laban's estate. For Laban was still a well-to-do man. Jacob had made him a wealthy man. In return, Laban relinquished any claim upon anything that belonged to Jacob or Laban's daughters. Laban invoked the witness of God to keep the arrangement secure. So now let's go back to our original three questions. Was Rachel a thief? Did she violate the commandment against stealing when she removed the images from her father? Was Rachel hanging on to pagan practices of worshiping statues as gods? Or three, why was Laban so upset at the missing images or gods? And of course, we learned that the images, from all the context here, were indications that Rachel was determined to hang on to her inheritance. That was her objective. That was her goal. She took them secretly because Laban had changed the wages so many times he could no longer be trusted in such matters. And I find this as an interesting story because it's recorded for our benefit. It's not recorded to disparage Rachel, to say Rachel is a bad person, but to know that Rachel was vigorously hanging on to her inheritance, that she was not going to willingly let go of it because she was familiar with what the expectations of all the deals were and how her father had diminished her inheritance. So she wanted to claim her inheritance and not let it go. But that pile of rocks meant that she couldn't go back to get that inheritance. And her inheritance then was with Jacob and Jacob's family and Jacob's God. We also have an inheritance. And it's up to us to have the fervor, the zealousness, to claim that inheritance. To do as Rachel did, to understand that there's an inheritance, if that is for us, that we're to hang on to that inheritance. In Philippians 2 and verse 5. In Philippians 2 and verse 5. Let this mind be in you which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God. I put this, called attention to this verse, because Jesus Christ knew that he was part of the God family. And he could put a claim on the inheritance as the firstborn of many brethren. And he didn't think it was robbery to do so. Rachel didn't think it was robbery to claim her inheritance. Christ didn't think it was robbery to inherit his place in the God family. And then Revelation in chapter 21 and verse 7. In Revelation 21 and verse 7, he that overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. Who inherits? Those who are overcomers. And we will belong to God, and God will claim us as his son. And let's turn to Romans 8. In Romans 8 and verses 14, in Romans 8, verse 14. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. For if you not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. And if children, then heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ. If so be that we suffer with him, that we may be also glorified together. In other words, we're indeed heirs of God, joint heirs with Christ. And a final verse in Galatians 3, in verse 27. In Galatians 3, in verse 27. Galatians 3, 27. For as many of you as have been baptized into Christ have put on Christ. Verse 28. There is neither Jew nor Greek. There's neither a bond nor free, neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And if you be Christ, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. So there's an inheritance for each of us, those of us, just as it was with Jacob, who was inherited from Abraham, the promises from Abraham and Isaac. And just as we are Abraham's seed, Christ said that we are heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, and we are Abraham's seed. Would that each of us have the zealousness to claim our inheritance, much as Rachel claimed her due inheritance, that we would then seek out, understand our true inheritance, and claim it from God.